for the discussion, the discussion is going to be taped, but if anybody's questions doesn't want to be recorded and taken out later, then you can just tell James. So any questions or comments? About what I said, about what we did, or about anything else? Yes.
I just said about meditation being about focusing on inquiry, anchoring in inquiry, made so much sense to me. Somehow I knew that, but it's the first time I really understood it. And then everything seemed easy because it was I found myself being lost into, mind going through my diary and thinking what's happening. And then inquiring, what is that about? What is it all about being in control of my own life? So I realized just through that, the inquiry, like two or three things that circled in my
thoughts. Good. Yes, it's very much, I think we have to see that the meditation is not just about quietness. It's about calming, anchoring, but it's also using the brightness of the mind to see what's going on. And I think sometimes we think, the famous phrase, I think, therefore I am. And I think the meditation, I think, teach us that actually we can exist and think, but being conscious without necessarily having to think about lots of things. Yes, Bian?
There's two situations I find quite tricky. In the sort of sense of mild to average daily life, tricky. One is just a ton of thoughts all going on at once, so there's nothing particularly in crap, or it was just too confusing. Another one is I can get too kind of self-obsessed about being watched, well, like a cat in front of a mouse hole. And the moment that something starts, you grab it, and nothing's really happened yet. And then you get too kind of self-involved, and you don't notice someone, falling over the street next to you or anything. Don't help me. In there, watching out for the next thing. But there's just too much going on, too jumpy about it.
Yeah, I think, in a way, we have to see that there are, for example, in terms of the thinking, because, we can also explore how we feel, how we experience the body. It's not just about being aware of the thought. But we are quite occupied by our thought, so it can be interesting to see what's going on. I think what we have to see also is that sometimes there can be lots of little thoughts which are just popping up and down, up and down. And the question, I think, is not that they should not pop up and down, but more, can they pop up? And can, within that popping up, I have some calm within my body? So I think it's also how can, using also the anchor of the body, can help us to be with the different activity and functioning of the thought. And so instead of kind of seeing, oh, the thought are just, a little topsy-turvy, and then me getting possibly a little agitated, possibly by this, or unsettled, or whatever it might be, can they be this kind of just, thought? And at the same time, I find within myself a place which is more stable, more grounded, so that I can encompass the thought doing that without being necessarily disturbed by it. I think it's what is interesting to look. I have this thought. How does it make me feel? Is it bothersome? Is it agitating? Or is it just, happening? Like if you had, suddenly lots of music happening, and then it can stop also. So I think it's kind of also looking at what happens with them in terms of how we feel about it, and if it kind of creates some agitation or not. And then the other thing, of course, what we have to be very careful with the mindfulness is to be too self-conscious about being mindful. So then you get two levels. And personally, I don't see mindfulness as becoming more self-conscious, because I think we're self-conscious enough. But so it's kind of like, if I go into that radar-like looking before anything happens, so I'm going to get it. Instead, can I be more in the experience? What is it going to help me? I think it's back to the body. What is it that's going to help me to be more in the experience? Nothing has happened yet. I don't need to do anything in a way. But possibly there is this impulse, but something could happen. So I need to be prepared for it. And could the preparation be actually more that one wants to see that self-consciousness? Can I come back to something which is more in the body or more in the environment? And then I think that's where the listening meditation can be a good meditation, to just then become more aware of the sounds, more aware of the sight, and then there is less of that kind of waiting self-consciously for something inside to happen, and instead becoming interesting of what is happening outside. So I think instead of, again, working with a different thing and how we can play with them.
Yes. You mentioned that thing about sometimes you can see thoughts and it's like the same old thought patterns recurring, and rather than judging that, just sort of looking at how quickly you can get come back to the breath. And not judging that, but I find myself sort of finding recurring thoughts and then thinking, oh, here we go again, and just getting quite fed up with it and quite demoralised. And I don't know.
So this, I think we have to see the difference very much. So this is an important difference between aspiration and expectation. Because this sets you up in a very different way. Aspiration, so you could have the aspiration not to repeat the same sentence again and again. And that will be, I would say, generally more creative. Or you can have the expectation, by now, I should not have this thought. And it's back to the impermanence. I think it's back to the impermanence, to the conditionality. But I think it's also back to the identification, how we build our identity. I think this really, to me, the meditation is really about how I built an identity. And often we build an identity through the thought we have about ourselves and others. And it's kind of possibly questioning this. So if you judge them, you set up a negative reaction. And that generally doesn't help. But more to see, again, the type, the language, and to see just, do I need to think this right now? Instead of it's always the same. It's more about, can I be in the moment with it? And to then, you see, I mean, if one has done meditation for a while, what is interesting to notice is that when this repetitive thought happens, very likely there is some unpleasant feeling too. So we can be upset that they repeat, or we can think, oh, they're repeating. What's going on? And then go into the feeling tone. And then we'll be less in the thought, in a way, and more in the experience right now. And there could be this slight unpleasant feeling tone. Or is it regardless of the feeling tone? So then it becomes something to investigate, instead of something which is a burden. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes we don't have them. I mean, of course they're repetitive, but sometimes we don't have them. And often it's kind of like just what I was thinking next year, this is something we could do, is look at the feeling tone. Because I think they're so subtle, but they really determine a lot of what we do. And that's why I think it's, you can go into, oh, not again, or you can go, oh, what's the feeling to? How does it feel? And then you can have the next question, how long is this going to last? Yes?
So, with just regards to this, obviously, if it is a thought, which possibly is based on a belief that you've got, you know, that it's built up in your identity, there's like, God knows, conditionings from the past and all the rest, and obviously the thought is connected to feelings, and obviously the feelings are quite disturbing feelings, because the thought has a negative pattern. So obviously I can go into the feeling, but the feeling is really strong and the feeling is no good. So what would it be? I mean, a lot of times happens to me that obviously I come into the feeling and I just let it be, and I'm like absolutely distraught, and I get to a point that I'm just, that's it. I don't know how to say, but whether I win the battle, lost the battle, or stuff like that, because it's, I know that it goes away eventually, but when you're right in the middle of it, it's a real struggle, because we can really feel it, and it's really strong.
Yeah, sure. So here, I would say there is actually two different things. I was talking about the feeling tone, which is actually before you get the what I call the feeling emotion, or the emotional sensation. So I would make the difference between the what we call in Buddhism, Vedana, V-E-D-A-N-A, which is just the tonality. You have the contact with something. You hear a little bird. You hear, I don't know, suddenly the fellow next door start to mow the lawn, and he put the music very loudly, and you might think, oh, and then a little unpleasant. So you have that, which then can also lead to having thought and things like that. But then you can also have conditions which makes you feel right now, in terms of emotional life, very unpleasant. And so then, generally, either it starts with the thought, either it starts with the emotional life, and then the two of them kind of generally compound each other. And that I will talk a little bit more this afternoon, because I think this is another letting go. It's about seeing that sometimes we have the ability to be with the feeling, here emotional sensation, and it doesn't amplify. It does not intensify. But sometimes you go to the feeling and then it intensifies. And then I think generally it's better not to focus on it. So I think here I was talking more what I would call like light, repetitive patterns, I presume. And here I would say we're talking of something which is more intense. Because I think you have three levels of, that it be sensation, emotion and thought. Light, habitual and intense. With the light, you can do what I was describing. With the habitual, it's kind of looking at what is a trigger, the condition and things like that. But with the intense, it's very different. With the intense, because it's so there, then what you're trying to do is actually create space. So to focus on it, I don't see there is much point, because it's there anyway. And if you focus on it a little too much, it becomes more intense sometimes. And so generally what I would suggest with that one is actually more to see how can I create little space so that it doesn't intensify more and it doesn't magnify. And so what is it? So in that way you can use the breath there as just being with the breath. Maybe I can just have 30 seconds of space. Or being with the sound, I can have a little space, go back to the intensity. So generally I would say there is more about not be focused on it, it's more about creating space. Mm-hmm. When it's light or habitual, then it's different. So I think it's also having the wisdom to know the difference. And over there, enough, yes.
Diverging too far, but I just wondered if you could comment on hope, this idea of hope, because one of the things that drew me to meditation was, I mean, certainly in the last, in 2014, my personal life has been pretty ghastly. And so I tried to confront reality through mindfulness with equanimity rather than hope. But hope is still a word I find very interesting in my writings that in the recordings I hear and so on. And I just wondered whether you have any views on it, whether there's a place for it or how one should respond to the H word.
You see, I would say hope. You see, it just depends. Is a hope aspiration?
Yeah.
Or is a hope expectation? You see, and I think we move from one to the other. I think it's very important not to just see, I must just have aspiration. We will move. It's very human to move from hope, which is expectation, to hope, which is aspiration, and we do back and forth. But to see that both have a very different effect on us. One, hope, which is expectation, this must be like that now. And so generally there is a frustration because you are expecting something, you are hoping for something to happen, and that is not happening the way you would like it to be. So in a way there is frustration because there is this image of what should be happening and it is not. But I think you can aspire to the situation changing, to the situation being different, to getting better or to finding this, that or another. And so I would see the aspiration as open-ended and giving us energy. So hope towards something, hope toward awakening, or toward more wisdom, more compassion, hope toward less suffering. And that kind of generally gives us the energy to try to do something in different ways. Either accept it, knowing it's going to change, but at the moment I can't do much, but I could do something a little later on, or who can I ask for help, or whatever it might be. But if hope and expectation, generally, it limits us. This is what I want, and it's very specific. And I might not necessarily get it in that way. And so generally it makes us limited and little tense. And I think we move from one to the other. Because sometimes it's like if you're sitting in meditation and you think, I must be calm now. And then generally, you know, it doesn't make your meditation calm. But if you aspire to some calm and you inquire, can I experience a little calm now? Not 150%, but is there in my experience right now some little calm I could access? That is aspiration. The other is expectation. So I think it's for us to see which hope makes me tense and limits the vision, and which gives me energy and open up. Yeah?
So what I'm hearing then is perhaps expectation is equated to attachment and aspiration vessel.
Yes. It's more like, because if you look, when you expect something, it's generally precise, you know, and it's kind of like a little abstract too. I want this. And so there is also a little identification, a little grasping. Aspiration is, that would be nice, but let's see what happens. It's kind of, let's go this way, but I am not deciding already what should happen each step of the way and how it should be and things of that nature. Yes?
I meditate with maybe 4 or 5 times a year at these sessions here. I don't usually meditate at home. And just listening to what you were saying earlier about the light and habitual and the intense, And is it okay for somebody at my stage not really to investigate the light of the habitual thoughts that come, but just to notice them and go back to the breath, because it helps me to relearn each time how to anchor. So in a way I'm not really ready to do the investigation or the inquiry as much. I'm very happy to notice the thoughts and think, oh, that's interesting, I'm having that thought again. But I don't really want to take it further than that, because I'm trying to get into the habit of going back to the breath, which is quite easy, but it does need practice. Because I don't do it very often, then for my stage, then I find that better. But is that advisable?
One is a freebie. But I think, you see, you as soon as you see what kind of thought you have, this is inquiry. You see, it doesn't have to be extremely complicated. As soon as you see it, it's like the brightness of the mind sees something. So I think you are doing it. I think we have to see that the inquiry is not an analysis, step by step. I mean, some practice do that, but here it's not that. It's just kind of like the mind sees itself. Oh, I'm thinking this, instead of being totally caught in it. So, in a way, as soon as you see the thought, you're back, actually. And so, of course, you could come back as forcing to come back, or you could come back more as, oh, yes, I'm thinking this, and now I'm coming back to the breath. And already you have a little bit of inquiry. And possibly you might meditate more than you think at all, but not in a formal way. I think we have to be careful of thinking we have to crank up 30 minutes or 40 minutes every day in a special way. I mean, you can meditate lying down in bed, you can meditate standing in the supermarket queue, you can meditate just having a cup of coffee. And the only thing required is just to be aware in that moment. Yes.
I can identify with what you said earlier, with when you actually can, when you observe yourself having certain reactions, for instance, and I can see myself having certain reactions, and I can see how it makes me feel, which is usually angry, resentful, or depressed. But nevertheless, I find it, even though I can see it very clearly, I don't seem to be able to find that distance that you speak about, you know, where you really distance yourself from it. I'm still in it anyway.
Yeah, this is the second stage. And this afternoon we'll get to the third and the fourth. But I think it's very important to see that this is already something. This is already something, even if it's uncomfortable. And to see that what's going to make a difference over time is actually the power of creative awareness. Is when we finally are really, when I mean embrace it, I really mean that. To totally know it. When I experience this, what do I think? What do I feel in the body? So instead of going in the story of it, because generally that's what we do, we go into the story of it, in the justification of it, or different things, or the identification of it, or whatever. But I think if we really know, I mean, to me, that's what really makes a difference for me with anger. One day I was really angry, and then I had to start to cook for a conference. And suddenly I saw myself kind of, you know, shaking, cutting the carrots. And I thought, wait a minute, what's going on? And then I really kind of stopped just for a minute and just looked. And in that moment, I really saw the whole body was shaking. And I thought, I realized nobody is doing this to me. I am doing this to myself. And in that seeing of it, it just went. And then I looked into the mind and I was saying, I am right, she is wrong, I'm right, she is wrong. And I saw that she must be thinking the same but opposite. And I laughed and I realized we're both right and wrong. But this took me many years. And this is really developing the power of creative awareness. And I think that's what we do here. That, in a way, the more we start to see it, and I remember many years ago, I would get up, I was living in a community, and I would get up in the morning and say to my husband, I am angry. And he would say, what about? I have no idea, but I'm angry. You know? And then I, you know, slowly I became more and more aware of it, instead of being identified with it. And then finally one day, I was really able to see it. And then it makes a big difference. But it doesn't mean that I don't become angry. But now if there is some, hey, very short, it just come up. I see it. And it goes. But it took some years to get there. I think we have to see this, that certain patterns are very strong. And so we have to see that anger, sadness, etc. are creative functioning of the organism. They become habituated and they get a certain power of habituation. And then what we're doing is building the power of creative awareness, so then we go back to the creative functioning. But it doesn't mean that we won't feel them, but actually we won't be identified with them. I think that's what goes over time. But it takes time to see that. Yes?
Can you say a bit more about working with intense emotions? So you mentioned using the breath potentially as a way to get some space and stability in the midst of intense emotions. Then do you recommend we go back to investigate the emotion and then sort of go between the two?
You see, when you feel so strongly about something, you generally can't investigate much. Generally, you're in it, you believe in it, you identify with it. You know, you like. So, the thing is to see, when you are in the intensity, generally you don't see that it will pass. And so, what I would say, I mean, one of the things I would suggest is to ask yourself in this moment, how long is this going to last? So if you want to inquire, I would inquire in that way. I would also inquire in what happened. I feel strongly about something, and it gives me the impression that I always feel like that, but I don't. So it's kind of looking, what happened? Generally, if we feel intensely, there was a shock to the system. Something either very happy or very surprising or very painful happened. So it's kind of to know, oh, first is not intensifying more and not going, it's always like this, I always feel like this, and whatever we do to amplify. So it's kind of the way, how can I not amplify this? This is happening. I'm experiencing this, which is problematic because something happened. You know, and sometimes we have, you know, things go well, and sometimes things don't go well. And so, how can I be with this? And like with my friend, it was just her knowing this is going to stop at some point. Or how long is it going to last? And at the same time, not just totally focusing on it all the time. Because then you reduce your identity to just feeling strongly about something. There are more to this in your life than this strong emotion at this time. So I think it's again not putting all our identity there. That's why I say don't focus too much on it because it's already so much there. And can you see that this is existing and is difficult and painful and intense? But I am more than that. That also is. And what is it that makes you experience yourself as more than that? Possibly connecting to others, possibly seeing that you can't fix this right now. But the fact that you can't fix it doesn't mean you cannot go and chat to somebody or listen to some music or become interested in something or whatever. So I think it's kind of seeing it in a wider perspective and not just I must sort this out. I think it's very important to see the inner bit of it, but also to see there is a wider condition around it. And behind you there is somebody.
I think my question is probably indicative of a slight bit of confusion that I have. If we sort of say that we have habits and patterns that we go through in our lives, there could be some sort of solace in the notion of impermanence and them just fading away from time to time. But aren't patterns and habits supposed to come back? And so how do you think, do you see what I'm saying? Like your friend could be in a situation which could happen again if it represents a part of a pattern, so we can find some solace in impermanence, but how do we unlock the story if it is actually a part of a pattern?
Well, that's where the afternoon talk will be about. This is to see, it's really moving from the pattern to the creative functioning of the beginning. All the pattern we have started as a survival mechanism, started as a creative functioning of the organism. Then they became pattern. And then we continue to do them when actually it's not very useful anymore, if it ever was. And so it's kind of, in a way, building the power of creative awareness so that we can go back to the creative functioning. So I think some pattern can go, and some pattern will actually arise and go very fast, instead of lasting. I think there is a difference between a week to a day to a few seconds. And, oh la la, lots, we have... Okay, very briefly.
There's an image that I find helpful. You know the way a lot of people leave their pet dogs outside shops, and the dog's on a leash, and he's tied up to something. And I've often observed that the poor little dog gets in a terrible state. Not always, but quite often they do. And it's obvious that the dog thinks it's been abandoned. It's kind of petting its paws on the ground. It's looking around. It's beginning to pant. It looks really anxious. I feel really sorry for the poor little dog, who thinks that its master is gone for good. And this poor little dog, this happens every time it's tied up outside a shop, right? And I identify that emotion as being the kind of, as what happens when I'm overwhelmed by a negative emotion. It's something similar. So there's no creative awareness there. So I think it helps just to remember that, you know, we can learn. It's about learning to use our brains in a better way so that we're not like that poor little dog, constantly going through the same pattern of a terrible emotion. Every time this event occurs that they're tied up outside the supermarket.
Yeah, well, it's for its own good, so it does not go over the road. No. Good point, good point. And here there was...
I was just noticing in meditation earlier, I think it arose from your talking about the daydream and how often it's very delicious to stay with the daydream. And I was noting my reluctance to move on from memory. Pleasant memories, and actually realizing I have quite a sadness attached to coming back just in a breath. That's rather dull, you know. I mean, just what's the problem with being?
Well, it's how much. You see, I mean, you have a pleasant memory, it creates a pleasant feeling, you can stay there. Or are you sitting at home, somebody is asking you to help them, and you prefer to stay in your pleasant memory? So it's more, I think, you know, wisdom in connection to that. Not that we should have not pleasant feeling with pleasant memory, but do I use that pleasant memory, pleasant feeling, to compare what is da-da-da-da? So by itself, it's fine. It's what we do with it, and in which circumstances. And this is really the last one, because we have to stop.
The notion of the feeling tone that you mentioned very, very profound, in the sense that it seems to set up the whole quality with which we then experience thoughts, feelings, sensations. And if that's the case, do you see that as something that we can have intention to cultivate a light, playful, curious feeling tone rather than a rigid, expecting whatever feeling tone? Or is it more organic? Is it not? Can you get stuck in the intentionality around it?
The first thing you would have to do is being aware of them. It takes time because it's very subtle, very fast, very subtle. And then, personally, what is very interesting is to see how they change and how they. I mean, it's, I would have to spend a whole day on. This is really a whole day. I mean, next year we could do that. Just, you know, look at the feeling tone, because I think it. Actually also connected to ethics and many different things. But feeling tone is basically what happens upon contact. I hear a thing, I see a thing. And it's actually conditioned. Somebody might like a painting, somebody else might not. So one will have a pleasant feeling tone, the other will have an unpleasant feeling tone. The question, what the Buddha questioned, was not the fact that we experience pleasant feeling tone is being human. It's what do we do with them? Pleasant feeling tone, generally we want more. Unpleasant feeling tone, we generally don't want. So it's kind of looking, first becoming aware of them, and then becoming aware of how fast we react when we experience them. I mean, you can just do that at lunchtime, you know? Chocolate cake. Can I take seconds? So generally, you can hope to fix them, but generally, they're very. But that really would be a whole day to talk about. So we have to stop here. And now we have a 25 minutes of walking meditation. So in the walking meditation, we continue with the silence. And we again try to anchor in the body, in the breath, in the listening, and then just noticing again what happens, how we might get lost, how we might get come back. To me, what is important is that when we come back to the whole experience, to the whole moment. When we got lost in a thought, a sensation, an emotion, we generally reduce our experience. So we can also see the closing and the opening. And then we want to start again at 2:15.